This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Today I'm talking to Sasha Gupta from Cheeky Zebra. It was such a fun conversation. Sasha shares why she quit law to start selling cards, how she creates them despite having very little design experience, and her varied and sometimes quite amusing experiences of wholesaling her cards. She talks about how she was doing that initially, what's changed, and you know, and now she's doing by her own admission really, really well. And I think you'll be really interested to hear about her journey. I absolutely love how open Sasha is. She also talks a lot about her family and the role that they play in her business. I think you'll really love this conversation, and I'd now like to introduce you to Sasha. So hi, Sasha. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you. Can we please start by you giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
Yes. Hi. So I'm Sasha. Our business is called Cheeky Zebra. I say our business. It is pretty much my business, but it's become like a family business. And by that, I mean my nan helps me pack cards for free. So we sell fun and cheeky greeting cards for real life.
Perfect. Thank you. And we'll talk a little bit more a bit later about the role your family plays, because I follow your Instagram stories. So I know your nan is a huge part of your business. We definitely, definitely will talk about that. But let's start right at the beginning, Sasha, and talk about how and why you started Cheeky Zebra, because I know that I did see that you quit law to get started. So I'm just really fascinated in the backstory, if you don't mind sharing that.
No, of course. It's funny you say that. Literally every time I get into a taxi. So I'm Indian for anyone listening, and literally every time I get into a taxi, I normally have an Indian taxi driver, and the first thing they say is like, what do you do? And I'll be like, oh, I've got a greeting card business. And they'll be like, oh, cool. And then we'll get talking, and then they'll end up telling me about their kid and be like, so what did you do at uni? And I'll be like, oh, I did law. And then they'll be like, so what have you done with your life? I get that like all the time. I studied law at uni, and then I went on to do some corporate jobs in London, and then I actually started doing law. I came back home and I did law. I think I worked at a law firm for a couple of years, and I started doing Cheeky Zebra on the side, because you know when you just know something's not for you, and I just always wanted to do something more creative. And like when I was younger, I'd always wanted my own business. I remember I used to tell everyone I was going to have a fish and chip shop. I was so proud of myself. I was like, five, I'm going to make fish and chips. And then the truth is, I saw a Facebook ad for another card company, and they were doing like funny greeting cards. And I literally just remember thinking, oh, I can do that. And then that was literally it. Like, I think I had also gone through a breakup at the time. So I just decided that I was going to start doing breakup cards. So my first little range was like a bunch of breakup cards. And so I did this all while I was doing law on the side. And then eventually I decided like, I can't do this anymore. So I quit law and I gave myself a year to give it a really good shot. And now it's 4 years later, I think. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, your brain's like trying to do the maths in your head, but yeah. So fingers crossed, it's been all right.
So how did you teach yourself to design and print cards? Because I know that you like do them all yourself. And I can't work it out, Sasha. Do you hand draw them or do you draw them online? How do you do it, and how did you learn how to do that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I taught myself how to use Photoshop, but I find that anybody who can properly use Photoshop and sees me play around with it finds it really triggering, because like I'm clearly not doing it properly. But I used to, when I was actually in law or any corporate job I've had, I used to, whenever I was on the phone, I'd open up Paint, you know, on, and I would just draw like endless pictures. Like I'd be on a really serious call and I'd just be like colouring rainbows in on Paint. So like, I've always enjoyed kind of drawing-y stuff. So what I do at the moment is a lot of my cards, you'll notice, are kind of text-based. That's purely because like, I'm not a graphic designer. But and if there are illustrations, they'll be really simple. And now what I used to just draw them on a sketch pad, take a picture, scan it into Photoshop and then colour it in. But then now sometimes I'll buy images. And then what I've also done recently is because I wanted to do cards with people and I can't do people. And then I found like this way on Photoshop where you can kind of take an image and then you can kind of distort it and like make it more of an illustration style. And then I can like go over it a bit and change it a little bit. So yeah, I've managed to kind of get around it that way. But I definitely wouldn't say that I'm a graphic designer by any means.
Oh, but that's so clever though that you found out a way to do it. And I also love the reference to Paint because that's so like 2000s.
I feel like kids now won't know what Paint is, will they?
No, I don't think they will either, but I really appreciated that reference because I used to love Paint as well. So that's really cool. Okay, so you had the designs. So how did you learn how to like, because I know you do your own printing, don't you? You don't like outsource your printing.
No, so that was a massive learning curve. So when we first started our cards, like when I say first started, I mean like I'd sell them to like people I knew and I would get a piece of A4 card and I'd just fold it in half. I didn't realize that you shouldn't be folding card in half yourself. That crease line is a mess. I don't know if anyone's ever tried this, but you won't get a pretty crease. So I then learned like, oh, I need pre-creased cardstock. Okay, that was fine. And then it was like a nightmare trying to figure out what printer. So I just did loads and loads of research and just loads of trial and error. Like for a period we had like textured card and that would print awfully, or it was too thin, or it was too, so I think it took me about 6 months and a lot of wasted money because every time I thought I'd find the right stock, I did this really stupid thing where I was like, that's the right one, I should bulk buy it, and it's like, well no idiot, you should test it first before you spend all this money on stock. So yeah, it was just a lot of trial and error, and we still like have issues now. Like last Valentine's Day we were doing it on like desktop printers and we had 1,000 orders a day and it was a nightmare because they couldn't cope. So each time we kind of level up, it's another case of like figuring out what the next best solution is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. Do you have more than one printer now? I know that's a really random question, but
no. Yeah. It was all so now we've got 3 printers. So for when we're really busy, it's a lot easier. And like my granddad, he gets up when it's like Valentine's Day. He chooses to do this. I do not force him. He insists. He bans me from being near the printer because he thinks I'm bad luck. And he'll start at like 6 a.m. and he'll like get his 3 printers going and he'll have them kind of like all printed by say 10. So it's just like 4 hours of him just like standing at the printers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's intense. Yeah, but he gets really angry if you get near him. Like he doesn't want my help. He's like, get out. Like,
well, that's commitment. And you print your cards on demand, don't you? Which I think is really, really smart. And have you always done that? Or did you just like used to print off cards and hope they'd sell?
So originally I used a company called, I think I'm shouting them out because they're really good. They're called the Imaging Center. And like, I know a lot of people get their stuff printed, but we did that first, but I found it really hard for that reason. I didn't know what was going to sell. So I have over 1,000 designs. So I literally don't know what's going to sell until I put them on platforms like Etsy, Amazon, and the ones that take off will take off, or I'll do them on Facebook ads. And again, we just don't know till we test. So once I decided to print in-house, it just made it easier because it means that we can offer so many designs and it just doesn't matter to the customer. Like they get more choice. And we're not limited as to like what we can give them because then we're not holding stock. So if I know it's Valentine's Day, for instance, and we're going to run a Facebook ads, which I hope go well this year. And if we know like what our traditional bestsellers are beforehand, we might print a couple of thousand just so, because we know they're going to go. But I've learned the lesson now of like, I just won't print it unless I'm like 100% sure we'll get rid of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's also nice as well that I know that you can print messages inside the cards as well. So it's like, I guess that's another benefit of printing them for the customer, is that you can put what they want in it. And that's really nice as well.
Yeah, it allows us to occasionally, we don't do it too often because it does take so much time, but like a couple of the designs that we can change the name on the front as well. But even like figuring out, this is so silly, but even figuring out like how to print a message inside a card was so difficult. Like I kept flipping the paper the wrong way, and then like having to like teach my granddad, no, we flip it this way. It was like, it was such a minefield, but like eventually we kind of got our heads around it. And I would say our operations are quite like, are quite slick now.
Yeah, it sounds like you've made massive progress since you just started out like selling cards to your friends. So how have you, do you think, apart from like all the trial and error that you've done, what else have you done that you think's helped you grow to where you are now?
A few things. To be really like, the truth is, hire a really good Facebook ad manager. Like I'd be lying if I said that that wasn't the biggest thing that grew our business. Because I think I heard Carly Stringer does our Facebook ads, and like I only hired her to prove that they didn't work, just to tick it off my list of like things that don't work for us. And we did everyday cards with her and we lost money, like quite a lot of money. And then we did a Father's Day campaign, and I think we made like 17 grand in revenue for 3 weeks, which was huge considering like our average item is £3.95. Like that's a lot. And that's when I was like, oh wow. So basically Facebook ads is something I continually invest and try in, and that's been like huge for us. So that was probably one of our biggest growth things. But then the other things have been like social media. So definitely showing my face on Instagram, because a few years ago I was terrified of showing my face, and if anyone sees my Instagram now, you won't believe it, because what I do is show my face. It's just endless face. But I found that kind of showing more of the personality and the people behind the brand, it can be a bit, well, for me, it was quite scary, but actually that's been really helpful because people like to buy from people and they actually are interested in like your story and stuff. So that's really helped us. And also Pinterest, weirdly, I spent at the start a lot of time pinning and a lot of time like setting up a scheduler. And actually that brought us in a lot of organic traffic that we weren't getting from anywhere else. So that's been really helpful. So I'd say those were the three things that's definitely helped us the most.
Well, that's so interesting. Thank you. And you know, you're the first person I think I've spoken to who's mentioned Pinterest, which I find really useful. Is that still working for you now? Do you still get traffic for your pins?
Yes, I do. It's on my list right above me here. It says Pinterest in capital letters because I have like not scheduled for ages. And but even though I've not scheduled for ages, I would say we get 300,000 views to Pinterest, our Pinterest account. And from that, I get a good few sales a month from Pinterest organically still, even though I'm not pinning. So like when they go viral, they kind of stay in the atmosphere somewhere and it keeps bringing us traffic and sales back. So it's been so helpful. I would say that I get the most benefit from it though when I've got a scheduler running, so I use Tailwind, and when I've got pins like scheduled in the background, then it definitely helps our sales, especially for when things are a bit quieter. It's nice that you've got something kind of working for you without having to think about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess it does, I guess Pinterest is, I know it's a search engine, but I guess it's also kind of social media. And I think it is true, isn't it, that you need, the more consistent you are, the more views you get and the higher you're up in the algorithm and all of that. I suppose it's probably the same.
Yeah, I think so. I think that what I would see it as a search engine and not as a social media particularly. I know some people use it as branding, like as in the, but my most controversial Pinterest tip that helped us the most was I pin competitor products, which I know a lot of people would probably not do. I think it's counterintuitive, but actually I found that really helpful because it teaches Pinterest to associate your products with the same stuff. So it teaches Pinterest that like, say this is a funny birthday card that does really well, you pin that one and then you pin your own. Pinterest is like, oh, this board's already full of like other funny birthday cards, so Sasha's pin must be a funny birthday card too. And I've actually found like having that approach to it has been like the biggest game changer for us with Pinterest. That definitely helped with our views and traffic.
That is a great tip. Thank you. That is so interesting. I think, yeah, that sounds like a scary one to try, but I'm so pleased that's worked for you. And I think though that we shouldn't obviously be scared of competition because it's always going to be there. So I guess acknowledging that, yes, there are other people that sell funny birthday cards, for example. I mean, people know that anyway. So yeah, it does make...
And you know what, I probably am getting other people having traffic to their sites too from us pinning them, but every time we pin, it's almost like you get more authority for your own pins. So it's sort of, I just don't think about it, but I don't know if it's obviously different if, like, you know, we have so many cards. I think it's maybe, I don't know if the same strategy would work for other products, but I definitely think it's something that people shouldn't be afraid to try.
That is really interesting. Thank you. I've never spoken to anyone. I think I'm feeling like I need to get a Pinterest person on at some point. Yeah, I've heard that Pinterest can be great for products, but you're the first person I've spoken to who's gone, yeah, actually it has worked. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk to a Pinterest person because I'm always quite scared that I'll tell them what I do and they'll be like, that's not what you should be doing, but it is what's worked for us. So I'm like, practice or not, if it's worked for us, I'm kind of like, you can't really tell me that it hasn't worked for us.
And coming back to your social media, which I will link to your Instagram in the show notes for this episode, actually, Sasha, because I love your stories. And I found you, I can't remember if you found me or I found you, but we found each other on Instagram. And I love watching you. I think your story is so funny and so engaging. And yeah, I'm definitely not going to buy cards anywhere else. You've convinced me that you are the world's best card company.
Literally, I've learned that if you say something enough, then it just becomes true. It's fine.
And one thing I love seeing in your stories and your social media in general is like the role your family plays in your business. I think it's so sweet. I think your nan is so funny. Do you want to talk about sort of how your family are involved? I mean, you've mentioned your granddad a bit and your nan, but
yeah, I think so. I am really lucky. I have like a very supportive family, because I know like sometimes when you're starting a business it can be really difficult. I'm not saying that it was easy for me to explain to my granddad, who's like quite strict Indian man, was at one point, to be like, hey, I'm quitting law to sell cards. Like, that wasn't the easiest thing. But basically what happened is, when I said I was going to take a year to give it a full, basically my granddad actually said to me, he pulled me aside and was like, you're obviously not happy doing this law thing, you seem to like this card thing, it actually seems to be making you some money, so you can do it. So I always say I gave myself a year, but the truth is my granddad was like, you have 1 year, and if you don't sort it out, you have to go get yourself a job, basically. And so what happened was, with my family involvement, is like, so first I think my grandparents were like, this is like, my grand's always been really sweet and supportive, but I think they were like, this is this cute thing that Sasha's doing. And then when the Facebook ads happened and we suddenly started getting like 300 orders a day for Father's Day, I think everyone was a bit like, oh, okay, this might be a real thing. And then from there, they, just because I needed the help, they, everybody chipped in. So like my auntie, my grandparents, like everyone like chipped in. And then as it's grown, my grandparents actually have a travel agent, and they don't have a lot to do. They just sort of keep it open for something to do almost. So now it's like this weird thing where it's become like something that they enjoy doing for something to do. So it sort of gives them purpose, but I never want to say it like that. And it's become more of a family business. So like now my gran helps pack the cards, my granddad prints the cards, and they do it alongside their own job, and they very much love it. And it's funny because they have their travel agents downstairs, and like they'll have customers, and then my gran will say to her customers like, 1 minute, I'll come to you in a minute, I'm just packing this order. And I'm like, can't do that.
That's so funny.
So yeah, no, it's really fun, and like I'm really close to them, so like it's nice for me to also be able to spend that much time with my nan. Like, we do the cards together, it's quite fun, and like putting her on my social media I really enjoy, but I'm also like very mindful that she's like the queen of the show, so if she doesn't want to do it, then I'm not gonna like shove a camera in her face. But she is hilarious, and she is a savage. She like pretends to be so sweet, and it drives me insane, but this woman bullies me. She's like 70 and she's like but it's funny as well, because some of the cards are quite rude, and I used to think like she wouldn't understand them, but I caught her one day laughing to herself at one of the really rude ones, and that for me was like a really turning point in my life, and I was just like, I'm not going to discuss that with her.
Do you assume that it just went all over her head?
Genuinely, I think I asked her, because on my Instagram every so often I'll do a chat with her, we'll film a chat together, and I asked her, I was like, what do you think of like these rude cards, do you understand them? She was like, I wasn't born yesterday. I was like, oh, okay.
Where do you get the inspiration for your cards, by the way?
Just life. Like, I think I'm one of those people where a lot of the things in the cards are things that I would say. They're very much in my voice, if that even makes sense. Or like sometimes like my friends will like have an idea, or they'll message me and be like, what about, have you thought about something like this? But generally, like, they're just, I'm quite like, I give compliments in quite a sassy way. Like, they're very backhanded. That's just like who I am as a person. So I think a lot of it just comes from like just how I would speak normally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And I guess I can see as well from some of your newer cards that like you also take like cultural things, you know, things that are going on, like I'm trying to think of an example. So I've seen your Squid Games card, for example.
Yeah.
That's kind of a thing that's happening.
that's definitely been newer. That's been since I wanted to try something different. And I never thought I could do the pop culture cards on the account of like not being able to draw thing. But since I found like this app thing that kind of helps you turn it like a photo to a drawing style, I was like, oh, I'm in. And so since then, it's been really fun to be able to play around with like more of like topical pop culture type cards. That's been really fun.
And do you have cards that sort of come in and out of the range, or like once they're there, are they there forever? Because you were mentioning earlier you've got over 1,000 cards, and that's a lot to keep track of.
It is a lot. The spreadsheet's a lot. But no, I think this is a difficulty, and I actually want your opinion on this, because so if you go to our website, like I sometimes think the ranges can be a bit big, but now I've like separated them out into mini ones, it's not too bad. But I always have this view of like, if it's one person's perfect card and they've brought it, I don't want to get rid of it, because even if it just works for one person, at least they've managed to get that card that fully matches their situation, even if it's quite niche, if that makes sense. But if like I have, so I tend not to, if there's some cards that are like really out of date, then I will get rid of them, because it's like, if the joke's a bit dead, like I've got a card that's like Netflix and you're the chill to my Netflix. And I feel like that was kind of a thing years and years ago, but less so now. So I think maybe a couple of years from now, that might make the cut. But generally, I would say they're quite evergreen. Like obviously these topical ones that we've just spoke about, like for Squid Games and stuff, that's different. They all have an expiry date. But otherwise I kind of think like if they work, then I'll just keep them up.
Yeah, I would say so. I think the main thing is when you've got a massive range is just they, like you said, they need to be easy to find. I think as long as people can find the card that they want and they're not just like scrolling.
Yeah.
Then I think it's fine. But as you said on your site, the cards are really well organized. I think people would know where to go. And I mean, there are, let's face it as well, there are card shops that probably have an even bigger range of cards, but it's just like, it just comes down to how you categorize them, doesn't it, and break them down.
I think having your own website is magic for that, because actually I can have an unlimited amount of cards provided they're like packaged in the right way. Because I still look at cards and I'm like, oh, actually my home range is missing a bit more sass, or like I could do with a few more funnier baby cards. So I think I'll always have loads of cards. But when we did wholesale, that was tricky, because I realized then that shops don't care. They don't want to like go through 1,000 products. So I did just have to like massively cut it down. But I just went with the best sellers for each category, so it didn't feel too painful.
That's a nice segue, actually. Let's actually talk a little bit about wholesale, because I know that's something that you've had quite a journey on, shall we say. And I know it's something you started and then stopped and then have just recently picked up again. So do you want to talk about wholesale and sort of where you started and where you are now and what's happened in between? And I might interrupt and ask some questions.
Of course, please do. I've always been skeptical of like trade shows and stuff, because I just thought, why am I going to spend $2,000 for no one to buy my cards? That was like very much my attitude. It probably wasn't right. I've been since working with Teresa, the wholesale collaborative. No, what's she called?
Business collaborative. Yeah, she was actually, I'm just going to mention, she was on a podcast episode recently, which I'm also going to link to in the show notes, because I think you don't mind me saying, Sasha, she's amazing when it comes to wholesale. She knows everything. Great. She's got some great advice. So I'll link through to that, because I think that's really relevant.
Yeah, she completely changed my life wholesale world. So before I worked with Therese, I cold called. This is funny. Sometimes don't you find that not knowing is great, because it makes you just take action? Because I didn't know anything about how it all works. So I just called a shop and I was like, hi, I've got really good cards. I think you should buy some. And turns out they were a national store and they had 50 stores, didn't realize. And they were like, come to our place. So I went to their place and I had some of the toughest conversations of my life. And they were like, obviously everything will be barcoded. I was like, obviously, didn't even know how you get a barcode. I was like, sure, of course it'll be barcoded. And then they gave me a price that I needed to get to, and their price was outrageous. And I was so excited to have got the order, because I think they ordered like 7,000 that I took the price. And I think, I can't remember, but I made pennies a card. Like it wasn't worth it. I think for the amount of cards they ordered, it wasn't worth it. Like I think I might have made a couple of grand in total, but the amount of labor and stuff that it my family became a sweatshop and we got these cards out. So like ever since then I was like, and it was so funny because to the outside world it looked so successful, like everyone started seeing my cards like in these shops everywhere, but from a bottom line perspective, it just wasn't worth it.
And presumably you had to print all those cards, put them in envelopes, package them up, put them in boxes, send them to these stores.
It was awful. Like we had to, there was like the first order was about, I think, 7,000. We were hand packing, and also we don't just put them in envelopes, because when they're going to stores you have to put them in cello wraps, and our house is full. When you, if I don't know if anyone's ever had to do this, but when you seal a cello wrap, you get these little flimsy bits that come off the end, and you can never get them off your hands. And like, I think weeks after that order, I was still finding them like in cupboards, like just these little package bits. So it completely like took over my entire house. And yeah, so it was one of those things where it looked really shiny on the outside, but actually just wasn't worth it. So I was really cynical about wholesale. Then I started working with Therese, and she was kind of like, made me see that it is possible to make it work profitably. And it was interesting, because selling to normal people is fine, and I'm proud of our cards, I think they're great, but it made me realize I had a lot of insecurity in myself. You know, when you're trying to sell to a shop, I started to think like, oh, are our cards even funny, or are they as good as other people's cards? And then Therese kind of said to me like, Sasha, you sold 50,000 cards to people like online, so why is this different? Like, it will be fine. And I think it's really interesting, but once you get over like the mindset stuff, touch wood, I think it's going to be really helpful. Because say, so at the moment, I think the target is to hopefully get to like 10 customers by the end of this year, like regulars, and it's not too far off. But imagine I can grow that to 50 by like this time next year, or 100 this time next year. And you realize like it will take so much pressure off like your income a little bit. So yeah, that's been a bit of a journey for me.
And it'll put you in front of more people, obviously, as well. Yeah, it all sounds good. So what have you learned about sort of like the process side of things though? Because I'm guessing, so if you do end up with 10 regular customers, have you thought about what you might need to do differently in order to actually like fulfill those orders, as well as fulfilling your everyday orders you get through your website? Because it sounds like that could be, when I say a big jump, I hope you know how I mean that. I mean, in terms of the number of cards you're having to produce on like a daily, weekly, monthly basis, that could be a huge jump. So have you thought about that at all?
Not yet, because I think I'm a little bit like, deal with it when it comes to it. At the moment, it's not too crazy, because you to do 100 cards isn't too time consuming for us to manage. But I've had to put in separate processes to be like, priority each day is to get today's orders done. Then it's the wholesale order afterwards, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Because so if we think of them as two separate things, and then I've got a system in place now, so like I do need to make our invoicing system a lot smoother, because it takes me a long time to manually copy in each line of what everyone's ordered. So there's definitely things that need to be fixed within that. But also weirdly, where I do have a system is more for the selling, thanks to Therese, than anywhere else. So now I use Trello, and I have like a board that tells me like all of the leads, and like they're all in the different columns. So like this week is like contact. So one section is like have contacted. Then after I've contacted them the first week, I put them in section two, which is like send a sample pack. And so it gives me a really clear place. And what's really cool is what she's done is for my existing customers, I have like columns, like months. So under each month, I know when they last ordered. So say somebody last ordered in November, then I set a reminder on Trello to email them in January for Valentine's Day. Or if they last ordered in like August, I'd have a note in October to say, hey, how are the cards going? By the way, we've got these new shiny Christmas ones. And so actually I found that having a system for selling has been like one of the biggest, because you don't have time to second guess yourself when it's like already systemized, if that makes sense. You can't talk yourself out of like approaching somebody if it's in your diary to approach them about this.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it sounds like, so first of all, it sounds like you weren't too worried about contacting people. You were saying you were just picking up the phone and not really knowing what you were doing. But after you'd had some sort of, I don't want to say bad, I don't know if they were bad experiences, but let's say challenging experiences, you can tell me if they were bad or not.
Oh no, some of them were awful.
Yeah, did that change how you felt about picking up the phone and talking to people?
Definitely. Like, I called one person and the chat was going really well. Then I told him that I'd need him to pay pro forma invoice instead of 30-day credit terms, and he swore at me and hung up, and I was like, okay. So that one was pretty shit. Then I had I'm making people out to be monsters. They're really not, like, most people are lovely, but after doing, imagine when you're calling and calling and calling, like, you know, you've had like 30 phone calls in a day, and no one's really been that interested. Like, it does make you feel a way. But I think I had to like realize like it doesn't matter. Like, there's like however many shops in the UK, even if I can get 2% of them, then I would be happy. Like, I would be making loads of money. And so I had to realize that I almost started telling myself that every person that said no, I'm just closer to the person that said yes. And almost just like not, also, I don't know if this is true for you, because I know you had your own business, but like trying not to see it as a reflection of you. So if people said no to the business, I'm like, they said no to me. And it's like, well, they didn't.
Yeah, I think that's a really good attitude, thinking like every no is getting closer to a yes. Because, and I really resonate with what you said about taking it personally, because when it's your products and you've designed them and you've put like your heart and your soul and your time and your money and everything else into them, it does feel like they're rejecting you. So if they say no, I don't want your things, it does feel like you go like, oh, but this is, you know, they're saying no to me, but they're not, of course. So, you know, it might just be that they've already got their own stock list of cards or whatever the product is, but it is really hard not to take it personally. And not to take, well, for me anyway, I remember feeling like when I was getting no's for anything, I just used to feel like, oh, they don't like me, but it's nothing to do with you. And like, I think once you get sort of your ego out of the way, it really does help.
It's weird because it's like, obviously in that situation, you're upset because you're like, your ego, if anything, is diminished. It's not like you're being arrogant, but it is a case of still, you need to just get your ego away out of the way, in the sense of it's not about us. But like, I find that hard. I don't know if it's the same for you, but even like friends, like when I was like, oh, they don't love my, like, they're not super interested in my business, or they don't love my cards, I felt really like sad. And then I realized, like, my friend's a dentist. I don't call her and be like, how was picking teeth today? Like, I don't do that. I've never done that. So why, just because I've started my own business, do I expect that same level of thing? So I had to deal with it with that, and then I had to deal with my ego with wholesale too, and just be like, you know, you're just not going to be everyone's cup of tea, in the same way that I don't like everything, but that doesn't mean I hate people.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the only exception of that for me is that I really don't like it when people don't respect what you do, because it's your own thing, and they kind of think you've got like a, I'm saying little in air quotes, they think you've got like a little business
or a hobby,
and they don't take it as seriously as if you were employed, and you could be doing exactly the same thing, but if you worked for Clinton's, they'd take you really seriously. But because it's your own thing, they're like, oh, it's just your little hobby or your little side business or whatever. That's what I find quite offensive.
Other than that,
it's fine. Do you?
No, I think I can understand more, of course, why that would like not be okay, because they are just diminishing your kind of livelihood. But like, I definitely get a lot of that, but I don't know if there's something a bit like unhinged about me, but whenever someone's like that to me, I just sort of enjoy it now. I just kind of like save it in a bank of my head of just like motivation, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, that's fine.
That's really good. Possibly it says you've got more self-confidence than I do. Possibly, because I take it really badly. To be honest, it hasn't happened to me for a long time, but when it did, I used to take severe offence to it. So yeah, maybe emotionally you're doing better than I was.
I mean, I've had a lot of therapy of that.
Oh no, but I'm really pleased to know that doesn't get to you, because I feel like it's really, like, having your own business is hard anyway, and when like everyone around you isn't, even if they're not being dismissive, if they're not being fully supportive, it can be hard. So no, I'm really glad that you don't have those feelings.
Did
about
you
it
ever have people have like quite intrusive questions that they wouldn't ask if you didn't have your own business?
Yeah, like how much you're earning and things
like that. I was like, when I was working in law, you never once asked me how much I earn, but today you're gonna be at lunch and be like, so Sasha, how much money have you made this month? I was like, how much money have you made, bitch? Do you know what I mean? It just felt a little bit like, excuse me. I just wonder if that was the same for you, like just this thing of when you start a small business, people just suddenly think that it's a weird like perception shift in terms of questions that you get asked.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And like the generous part of me though, it does feel like some, I think part of it is genuine curiosity, because I think there are lots more people who would like to have their own business, do their own thing, than actually do. And so there's a part of me that thinks that some of these questions are like, they're going, I wonder if I could do that, but would I make enough money to cover my mortgage? You know,
oh,
like,
that's fair. No, yeah.
I think part of it might be that. I mean, some of it, I think it kind of depends on who's asking, and you know, who's asking and where they're coming from. But I think a lot of people that I speak to, I think are coming from a place of, oh, I was quite like to do that, and they're just trying to suss it out, trying to think, okay, is she making a living? And you know what I mean? And I kind of get that, because I think it is such a scary thing to do. And I, when I started my business, before that I'd already left my corporate career and I'd been doing something else. It wasn't as much of a big leap, but say you're like working a full-time corporate job as you were and you're thinking of leaving that, that's a much bigger leap of faith, isn't it?
Yeah, that is really scary. I mean, like, I moved back home as well, which helped. Like, yeah, I can't deny, like, I can't pretend that it isn't scary. And I think you're right, actually. Maybe I'm being a bit cynical. Well, no, some people were just being nosy, but I agree that, like, it is fair that somebody would want to ask those questions from that perspective.
Yeah, because it is so scary to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is scary. And it doesn't, you know, I don't think as well that it's a case of it doesn't work, because obviously sometimes it doesn't always work. But, you know, there were times for me where things have gone horribly wrong. But I think if you're consistent enough and you keep at it for long enough, I don't know anyone where they haven't figured it out, whether they've had to pivot a lot or not. Like, if they might have had to change a lot of things. But I think if you're willing to change and learn, I think you can kind of figure it out.
Yeah, I think I see what you mean. I think that's right. I think that, like you said, even if it is a big, you know, even if it's a big pick a pivot, like a complete 180, mm-hmm. I think that, yeah, if you keep, I think there's a lot to say for consistency, isn't there? And I was talking to a friend recently who started up a completely different business, and sort of, and she's a few months in and was saying, you know, she hasn't made a lot of money. And I was saying, well, if you keep going, I truly, truly believe you will. But the main thing is you just have to keep going. And I think it's getting through that hard early stage where you're not quite sure what's working. And I mean, we all still make mistakes now, but I think that early bit where you're making mistake after mistake, potentially, I know not everyone does. I did. Mistake after mistake. That's the bit where it's like, am I cut out for this? Should I be doing it? And I think if you can get through that, then I think you do stand a much better chance. But I read the statistic. I think a lot of businesses do stop fairly early on. And with some of them, I do feel like, and obviously everyone has their own reasons, but I do think with some of them, if people sort of kept going, you never know, do you, what might be around the corner, whether you give it another 6 months. And not everyone can for various reasons. But I do think for lots of us, and almost everyone I've spoken to, the beginning bit's been really, really tough for different reasons.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think back to when I first started and I quit law and I'd only had that kind of year to go, those first 3 to 4 months were awful, like, because nothing was fully kicking off to where it needed to be. And I was working at my grandparents' office, I work upstairs, and like they were watching over me and they could see no orders were coming in, and like that felt really scary. And I remember that time that was really hard. I kind of had to tunnel vision and almost not care about the results and just keep putting in the consistent action and just focus on the action and not let my fear of the results kind of cloud me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense, because I think everything takes much longer than you think it does. And you see people on like Instagram and you feel like they've come out of nowhere, but they haven't, have they? They've probably been plugging away for years and you've only just noticed them. It's not that they've been an overnight success. I don't think there's such a thing.
I don't think so, but I think it can definitely look that way. I'm sure people look at our card shop, actually, because I remember when I was first starting to start out, I'd look at loads of people card shop and be like, they've just instantly come out of nowhere and they're huge. And I'm sure, like, we're not huge at all, but I think people might think like, oh, they seem to be doing, got like been making more sales like overnight. And it's, yeah, it's just, that's not how it is.
Yeah, and that's why I love having these conversations, because I think it's really not good for people to hear that, you know, yes, you're, you know, doing well now, but actually there have been those hard times, you know, in the outset. And I think that's really important for people to hear that, because sometimes it can look, especially on Instagram, it can look like everyone's doing better than you, everyone's further ahead than you, and not everyone shares the hard stuff.
Yeah. And to be fair, they're not going to, but I think I'm really glad that you do stuff like this, because I listen to things like this just to remind me that same thing. And then I only have to think about my own life. Like, I love my grand to death and I love my family business and I love that we work together, but sometimes it's infuriating. Like, and sometimes like things will go wrong and like, well, you know, but that's just part of it, isn't it? But I do think it's easy to forget that when you kind of think only you have the hard stuff, and then when you're looking at other people's businesses.
Yeah, you're really good about being honest about things like that, actually, which I think is great.
Yeah, I have to be careful sometimes. So I'm like, there's only so honest I can be before like somebody, like my grandparents, like 9 grand will hit me. So I'm like, I have to try and find these like weird balances between like what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah, that must be like a very fine line.
Yeah, I do sometimes think I veer a little close to the edge.
So one final question, Sasha, if you don't mind, which is, what would your number one piece of advice be for someone else who wanted to sort of start up their own business, particularly one selling products? What would you say would be something you'd want people to take away from this?
I want it to be useful, so I'm thinking. I'll be honest, practically for me, so before Facebook ads kicked up about, the best thing that I did for my business, and it won't be the same for everybody, but is I sold on third-party channels. So to start with, putting yourself on whatever's right for you, whether it be Amazon, so I know you do a lot with that, or Etsy or eBay, I sold on all three of those. And that was probably the best thing I did, because it allowed me to get money in fairly quickly with low effort and get kind of low cost and get an immediate answer as to, like, does anybody want this? Which designs do well? So I think before you, because like doing all your other marketing takes a lot of time to build. So wherever you can kind of bring revenue in kind of straight away, I think you should definitely do that.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you. And I think that makes sense. I did the same initially. I started off selling on Amazon, because like you say, those marketplaces, whatever ones they might be for your products, there's customers there.
Exactly.
Because the hardest thing initially is getting customers to come to you, whether that's your social media, whether that's your website. They don't know you, they've never heard of you. It's much, much harder to get traffic to your site, isn't it, than it is to get traffic initially somewhere else.
And like, you should still 100%, I would say, do your social media, but your social media is going to be frustrating, in my experience at least. And at the start, it's a slow build and it's going to be frustrating. So I would definitely make sure that you're getting income elsewhere where you can, and then still working on your social media, because then at least as that's building, it's not, you're still getting money in, but also the customers that are coming to you from the other platforms, you know, it's the basic stuff like giving them a thank you note that kind of references either your social media or your main website, and then bringing them over. But if I think back and I didn't have any of that kind of third party benefit of traffic, and it was just me doing my social media from scratch, I would definitely find that quite disheartening to begin with.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I would say the same about a website as well. I still think if you start selling on Etsy, for example, have a website anyway, even if it's quite basic, you might not have everything on there. Just have your own place as well, because while you're making your sales on, let's say, Etsy, you can be building up your website. That's something you can 100%. Be doing in the background. You definitely don't need to have it all from day one. But like you say, you need to be getting some money from somewhere. So yeah, I think that's fantastic advice.
And I guess the other thing is just kind of, it's like, I'm sure that you'll have people that talk about this a lot better, but like, and I'm sure you've known this, because like, it sounds like with both of us, at least, we didn't have the most confidence in like what we were doing at the start, because like also your own insecurities, etc. But the biggest piece of advice I'd give you is just like tunnel vision and just keep going. Almost like turn off the part of you that's like, because you don't really have time to explore the part of you that's like, what if it fails? Like, you just don't, it's a waste of your time, that entire thought process. So just try and have as much tunnel vision as possible and just keep focusing on the next task and the next task and the next task. And then like momentum will start to like build. I promise you it'll build. It feels like it won't, but it will.
No, it will. That's fantastic advice. Thank you. And I'll also, if you don't mind, I'm just going to add one thing to that and say, with that tunnel vision, try not to pay too much attention to what other people are doing.
Yeah.
Because if you're constantly comparing yourself, I think that nothing can drain your confidence than looking at a competitor on Instagram or whatever. That can, do you know what I mean? However well you're doing, if you start comparing yourself to other people, I don't think you're ever going to win that one.
It can happen to me now. I'll see like other card shops, or I'm a bit ridiculous. I'll see Moonpig and then I'll get really upset. And it's like, well, they're Moonpig, Sasha, calm down. But like, yeah, I don't think it's a healthy space. Like, I don't think it's beneficial.
Yeah, I don't either. And I hope for you, Sasha, I would say as well, and I'm sure you do know this, but for you, I think what you can offer that Moonpig can't is great, because they're like, I mean, what you do is pretty much the same. You offer really good cards and you can offer the personalization and everything. But what's special about you is they're your card and they're your personality, and there's like a face behind it. We see you and we see your nan, and they can't do that and don't do that. So I think that's something I'd say to anyone who's sort of comparing themselves to bigger companies as well, is that you've got something that they can't have. They're too big for that now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, completely. I'm really glad you said that, actually, because somebody else said that to me when I was starting out, because I was like, no, I don't want to show my face, like, it's unprofessional. Like, and then somebody said to me, like, think about why you buy from people. And actually, when you think about it, chances are you do like buying from a business where you, a small business where you know the face, and you're like, I like what they do. And so then you realize like, oh, other people will feel the same way about you. So if you think about how, what you like to, but why you like to buy from places, that might help you like realize like, oh, actually that is a thing.
Yeah. Thank you. And I also realize I'm saying this to you, I'm a little bit of a hypocrite because I'm really scared of putting my face out there as well. So it's probably a reminder to me that I need to start doing it as well.
I actually really enjoy your content. You did, what did you do? Was it like you did quizzes as well, where you were like, you could tell from like the branded, the bottle, and we had to work out what brand it was. Was it like something?
Yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I did do that.
But I also think it is worth saying that if you don't want to share your face, you can still build a brand online without doing it. If you're so against it, like there are ways to do it. Like you had some really good, that like, I really enjoyed that. And it showed me that we learned about what you did, but you weren't showing your face for that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. But I'm still going to try and show my face.
No, I still think you should show your face. You have a great face. Let's see it.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much for talking to me. Thank you so much for everything you've shared. I'm going to link through to everything that you do in the show notes so people can come and find you and find your cards. And yeah, thank you so much.
No, seriously, thank you. I had a great time.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do leave me a review. That really helps other people to find this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and do tell your friends about it too if you think that they also might enjoy it. You can find me at vickyweinberg.com. There you'll find link to all of my social channels. You'll find lots more information, all of the past podcast episodes, and lots of free resources too. So again, that's vickyweinberg.com. Take care, have a good week, and see you next time. Hi, this is just a little note. Say if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.